and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design, P-R-O-U-T, Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, Michigan, starring certified financial planner, Mr. Dennis Prout. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Ron. It is great to be here on Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. Joining us today is also Heidi Thompson.
Good morning.
Retirement Income Certified Professional. And later in the show will be Shay joining us, talking about the stats. She got interesting stats this week, and we're going to be talking today a lot about stats as well. Thank you as well to the team behind the scenes at Prout. 10 folks total supporting us and our clients in helping them achieve their goals, wants, desires, needs, retirement. Man, it's complicated these days, and we're going to be talking about some of these complexities and trying to help people parse what is going on out there in the markets. What do the stats say? Isn't it interesting? We're always trying to deign, is that a good word, what the markets are saying, or interpret what the markets are saying, and you know, where are we going? Do you know where you're going to?
Say translate.
Translate, yeah. That too. Try to give some information along with that today. We have a lot of information to share. I also want to say thank you to all the folks who've come in to see us in the last weeks. It's really fun to see things opening up. In fact, one of the notes from Vanguard was that the face-to-face businesses, if you will, they'll see significant increases in that, and we're already seeing that in our own as well. People more and more comfortable coming in, so thank you. As well, I couldn't believe it this morning. You know, the weather is subject to change. What are they predicting, 90 this weekend? So radical. How can that even be accurate? I mean, please, really? Anyway, we'll see, right? Just crazy. So today, investor blind spots, but before we get to that, what are some of the stats? Now, Ron, I know you want to see this. I'll show it to you in just a moment because it's that good. The chart below indicates the inflows to common stock funds since November of 2020 exceed the total inflows of the prior 12 years from young folks. As Robert Farrell, Merrill Lynch's legendary market technician, once said, individuals buy the most at the top and the least at the bottom. So in the last 12 months, we've seen more inflows than in the last 12 years from individual investors. So they had been sitting on the sidelines, and they jumped in. And we don't know when this will happen, but they tend to jump in toward the last of the market's uptick. It's clear from Mark Hubbelt's work shown below that the new young riders, as this article refers, are fueling the stock market boom. So it's interesting in terms of one of the tests. It's very interesting. At such times, this description goes on to say, veteran investors who've lived through prior bear markets will have already taken some money off the table. New investors who have never lived through a bear market and who therefore feel invincible not only won't have reduced their equity holdings, but will be intending to increase them. So a measure of brevity, perhaps, is needed at this point in time, given how high the market is, and just based on the stats, you know, truly, what are we looking at? Given the increased costs from taxes to corporations and individuals, the possible increasing interest rates that we most likely will see. Those two alone. Thirdly, can have an impact. Increasing inflation. Now that's the next thing to take a look at. Do we truly have inflation? Had an interesting conversation with a couple yesterday. They were commenting about food prices and the dramatic rise, and everything from melons to, whatever.
Beef pretty soon.
Oh, yes.
Right, because yeah. With that right. Recent hack, now.
Yeah. To JBL, I think it was. So this is from Gave Call, who is a very informed hedge fund manager. Co-founder Lewis Gave recently explained why we may be moving from an age of abundance to shortage in certain critical areas, which could tend, and I always qualify these things, could tend to cause inflation. Globalization has created abundant labor. Transportation and communications technology unlocked global labor, letting people in Asia, turn the page, work in the U.S. and Europe without actually being there. Job automation has had a similar effect. Energy became cheap and abundant due to the shale oil revolution and recent other advances. Solar, wind, nuclear, and hydrogen amplified this trend. Information flowed freely around the world, enabling rapid innovation and technological advance. Abundant labor, energy, and information combined to generate the robust economy we've enjoyed since 1990. It's been crazy. Crazy. Obviously, we've had some corrections along the way. But the market's returns, who would have thought that we'd be at a market of 34,000 to 35,000 on the Dow? Mm. And previously, 10,000 seemed like a pipe dream. I remember in 87, when the market went down to 1,700, I think at the correction in October of 87. So it's amazing how far we've come in this economy. Abundant labor, energy, and information combined to generate. These positive factors are now changing direction. The COVID-19 pandemic, this gentleman, argues that labor is no longer in surplus, which will lead to wage price pressure. Well, we're already seeing that. That seems like a foregone conclusion. Fossil fuel prices are rising faster than green energy sources can come online to replace them. Now, there's some argument you see from the talking heads about this. Well, all the green energy will come on and is tamping down, that's a report I heard, the energy prices. Well, that could be the case, but given the increasing demand and the tamping down of supply of energy that we're seeing because of the administration we're in currently, the prognosticators, if you will, are saying that energy prices are going to continue to go up. In fact, I have heard from relatively reliable sources that we could see gasoline at $4 to $5 by the end of this year.
So you have a government-led economy when it comes to energy. It's not a market demand. It's the government saying, we're going to switch to electric and that's it.
Yeah.
So they have to manage that. So I think like large screen or flat screen TVs, when they came in, it was free market that managed that transition. People yeah. could afford to buy them. They did. The price came down. But I get concerned sometimes that with a government managed economy here, how's that going to look with energy prices?
I mean, it's a great point. I mean, it always brings into the focus excesses and a great example, when I think it was during the Obama administration when they bought up all the paid people to get rid of their used cars and have them crunched.
Yeah.
Well, what did it do? It made so the prices for used cars went through the roof, and many people couldn't afford a car who really previously could have possibly afford a good used car. So it creates interruptions to the system of free market trade that often is not helpful in the end. So sometimes, not all the time, they can insert themselves in very unhelpful ways because they don't always understand or think through that people and companies respond differently. They will make responses based on thinking and going through the process of saying, well, if we don't have this particular chip, for instance, what are we going to do about the supply, the inventory? Well, they lay off people for 3 months perhaps and stop production until they can get those chips back. Whatever that may be, it's amazing how brilliant companies and people can be given some time and some thought process to adjust themselves instead of having somebody, some other entity arbitrarily come in and decide for us, this is what you need to be doing. That's a government-controlled economy versus a market-controlled.
It all goes back to those unintended consequences of certain actions and rules and regulations.
That's why you can say, if you ever hear somebody say, this is going to happen, they're almost always dead wrong. Gold's going to go to $1,000. Okay. It's at 1800 or 1900 now. I guess that could be a possibility. Well, there are several people on the internet who insist that's going to be the case. Well, it's amazing how wrong they've been.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to somebody and they arbitrarily insist that this is going to happen, they tend to be dead wrong. So if you will, now this sounds a bit preachy, and many times I'm saying this myself, to myself, don't listen to those folks who give an example or several examples of why this is going to happen and then give the end result as though it's already happened. Often, again, the adjustments that are made within the economy or within that commodity itself surprise the market. And guess what? The other variables that can be introduced, no one had anticipated. Okay?
That all goes back to the blind spots that you mentioned at the beginning of the show. That, you know, just reading that one person or taking that person without the research, that could be a blind spot. Maybe they have a blind spot as to some of the consequences.
Right. So we mentioned, sorry, Ron, go ahead.
You want to get a quick phone call before
sure,
we call?
Love
okay.
it. Yeah.
Let's get Doug from Cadillac for Dennis and Heidi, and then we'll continue on our path. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Mr. Prout.
Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. Hey, I am calling you very ignorant on stocks and monies that when you buy a stock and then you sell it and then the profit, I will say, and again, I'm very ignorant. This pertains to my 23-year-old grandson, okay. 2019, unbeknownst to me or his grandmother, he was buying and selling stocks. He did his 2019 taxes, but oops, forgot to claim
the gain.
Monies earned.
Okay.
And I completely ignorant on the whole thing.
Sure.
And I'm asking you, sir, if I don't even know where to go to get this unraveled. I know the IRS sent him 70 pages. I've looked at them, can't make heads or tails of nothing.
Jeez. I would recommend you.
I said more than geez when I found out.
Yeah, like crap, right? Well,
yeah, like, son, don't you realize that, you know, you're not hiding from the IRS, man?
Oh, man. Well, a good lesson, and I appreciate the phone call for sure. That's very helpful to a lot of listeners, too, I'm sure. So to help you, do you have an accountant or a bookkeeper?
No, sir.
Okay. Oh, you're going to want to get one.
I'm just a country boy trying to keep my head above water.
Well, yeah, if I would have known the score before it started, I would have done something about it. And I hear what you're saying. So, I would recommend you consult with somebody more knowledgeable, whether that's a bookkeeper or accountant in your community.
Like
who's
a CPA?
Yeah, a CPA. Yeah, now it's going to cost some money, of course. But I would take that whole thing, his tax filing from last year, his 2020 tax return, as well as
that yet. He did this on 2019, from what he said.
Oh, this is 19. Yeah, more reason to go see an accountant because time, the clock ticks. So Given this is 19, I'm sorry, I hadn't heard that detail or hadn't thought about that. So given that it's 19, yes, I would definitely see a CPA and take all the information you've gotten from the IRS to him or her. And if you want some referrals, happy to give you those in Traverse City. I don't know who's in Cadillac. I really don't.
I come to Traverse quite a bit, so that's not an issue. And you're the only guy that I know of that deals with retirements and things of that nature, just from listening to the radio.
Sure.
So help me understand, sir, real quick, and I apologize for all the listeners for my knucklehead being on the phone so long. So let's say my grandson bought a stock for $50 a share, and then in 5 months, the stock is worth this much now. Or would it be the other way? Anyway, he sold that $50 stock and made a profit on the sale.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what he pays taxes on, is that profit on that stock he sold?
Yeah, it's called a short-term gain. It's basically ordinary income. So that's when you get into the depths of this. And that's where you're going to want an accountant to help you figure out what exactly are the taxes owed. And then also respond to the IRS in a timely and informed fashion. Okay.
All right. And if you need an accountant recommendation, call your office.
Yeah, call our office, 231-947-3992. That's 231-947-3992. Happy to help you further on that. Okay.
All right. 1024 now. Doug in Cadillac, thanks for tuning in. Best of luck to you and
your
son.
Not fun.
It's his name.
You bet. Yeah. Okay. Good luck. All right. Before we get going in the rest of the stats, Heidi's got some interesting information on Social Security.
Yeah, I don't know how we go from that fun car song to Social Security.
Transitions, huh?
We'll give it a try. So there's a new study out by the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. And they're just talking about how some of the data that Social Security looks at and releases, they have a little different way of looking at things. When they talk, and the primary focus of this article is about people who retire at 62, which is the first or the earliest that you can apply for Social Security benefits. So they are looking at the trends in that area to see if they go up or down. And so the CRR, or that Center for Retirement Research, is looking for the number that is the percentage of people reaching 62 each year who claim at that age, whereas Social Security has traditionally just looked at the actual number of people. So they're looking at the percentage of people. And the Social Security has reported that 34% of women and 31% of men who claimed retirement benefits in 2019 were age 62. So when we take a look at this, they talk a lot about the drop in how many people are claiming at that earlier age. So from 1985 through 2005, the proportion of women claiming at 62 remained sort of steady at about 60%. Then it started to gradually drop to 34% by the year 2019.
That's because they were listening to our show. I mean, you know, what?
That's probably it.
They were just.
And now the numbers for men also had a similar, they were at about 55% from 85 through 2005. And then they have gradually declined to 31% by 2019.
To 31 from what percentage?
55. From 55 to 31.
Wow.
But when I was reading this, I had a question I wanted to ask Dennis about that. Because looking at that period, and we've talked to here on the show about some of the strategy that goes into deciding when you take your Social Security benefit, if whether Dennis thought that interest rates could be one of the factors that was causing the decline in people taking Social Security early.
Yeah, and honestly, you brought that up before the show, and I thought it was a great point because to me, it's always been about life expectancy, but given the reality of interest rates in the early 80s, they were in the 15 to 20% range. And now, what, 2, 3, you know, for borrowing money on a mortgage. So, yeah, those rates declining to the extent that they have, and that increase from Social Security remaining the same at 8%. So, relatively huge change there, that Social Security has remained the same in terms of its increase each year, that you wait to take those benefits. Yeah.
All right. So, some additional information are individuals who reach full retirement age at 66, you can claim at 62. But if you claim at 62, you are experiencing a 25% reduction for claiming early. The consequences of claiming benefits at 62 are going to be even more significant as full retirement age gradually increases to 67. So right now we're entering the period where people turning full retirement age goes up. Anyone between 1955 and 1960, we have a graduated scale of full retirement age.
Right. For instance, I was born in 59. I think my full retirement age is like 66 in 8 months, something like that.
And yeah. Mine's 67. So.
Yeah, because you're that much younger.
I'm way right? younger.
Yeah, way, much, much.
All right. And so for those people, it's a 30% cut in lifetime benefits. So it does have a consequence when you claim Social Security. So the most popular claiming age in 2019 was 66. That year, 30% of women and 36% of men filed for their benefits.
What a huge sea change.
Yep.
Incredible. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
That's okay. So for most people who forego that early claiming at 62, most of them appear to wait until that full retirement age. Only 9% of men and 6% of women waited till age 70 to claim the maximum retirement benefit. So, and after that, it makes no sense to delay claiming Social Security because you get no additional benefit once you get to the age 70. So by 70, that's when you want to make sure you're claiming Social Security.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you don't claim Social Security at 70, you're missing out because that's the last age at which you can claim. So if you haven't, you must, because you're missing out on that income, and the income will not increase. All right? Very good. Is that it, Heidi?
Well, she does. At the bottom of the article, they do make this one sentence that I thought was interesting. They said, according to their information, COVID is not likely to permanently reverse the trend towards later claiming. There was some discussion about that at the beginning of the shutdown. Yeah. But yeah. It's right now, it looks like it's not going to impact that.
Just to put a final point on that, from a financial planning best practice point, just had this conversation with a client yesterday. You know, we were pondering. He was talking about, should I wait? Almost all the publications in terms of what we read, financial planning, investment news, that sort of thing, financial planning best practice is if you can financially wait on your Social Security benefits. Because we talked about, of course, the benefit to you if you wait, but also possibly spouses, or a spouse, rather. Given that reality, in most cases, we can just say it that way, it makes sense to wait on Social Security benefits. So going back to the Fed's inflation numbers, do we have a few more minutes before we need to take a break? Awesome, Ron. Great. And then we'll have Shay come in and do our stats. So the CRB, Commodity Research Bureau, Foodstuff Index, the foodstuffs, which includes hogs, butter, sugar, grains, and other agricultural commodities, is up 15% this year. Now, this is as of April 23rd. So in news time, this is like eons ago, about a month. Trading at the highest level since the summer of 2012. Grocery prices are at seven-year highs. And then further, the price of an existing home surged 17% in March from a year ago, the fastest increase on record. on record. The official inflation numbers used by Fed policymakers does not capture these price increases. The Federal Reserve emphasizes core inflation, not the CPI. And that's where some confusion, I think, arose in our conversation last week, Ron, because you said, well, indeed, the CPI does include foodstuffs, but the core inflation rate does not, that the Fed uses. And that's where I confused the matter a bit, I think. So the Federal Reserve emphasizes core inflation that excludes food and energy prices because those components can be volatile. I just thought that that was funny. By the way, this is from Barron's to give a full report on that. So these core numbers, and it's been said that the Fed is going to be a lagging indicator, if you will. They're going to be slow to respond because they're not using all of the, if you will, the real numbers that people are seeing and that seems obvious to any of us who are out and about in terms of inflation. If you take a look at the picture of a quote of an inflation-sensitive investment like the Vanguard Short-Term Inflation Bond Fund, the symbol for that, by the way, is VTIP as in Paul, for anyone who wants to know.
VTIP.
For anyone who wants to take a look at that, just check that out on your screen for the last 3 months, you know, when you pull that up. It's incredible the jump that it's seen. These are short-term treasuries that reflect the real inflation numbers, the CPI. Sometimes a picture is worth a thousand of my words. There you go. It's really pretty dramatic, almost 2% or so in the last month and a half. A significant increase. So it's very indicative of what's happening with inflation, and it says that we have significant pressure on the inflation side. We'll see. Now, what's interesting too is the competing forces that will come in to tamp that down. The market may have some impact on that. They may not be as great as what many thought. So while I say inflation is certainly there, it can be controlled. For instance, if some of the spending gets controlled by our federal government. Now, most of you are laughing. Well, good luck with that, Dennis. If it is, given the competing forces that are coming in from both the Democrats and the Republicans to increasing spending, we may see less spending than what perhaps was anticipated. So all of these can come together to create perhaps less inflation than we had thought. But right now, there is a lot of increasing pressure on prices.
So I say inflation is noticeable by increased prices. You get less for your money. Part of the increased prices, shortages too, though, that are maybe COVID-related maybe, or some of the other reasons you had earlier.
Correct. So, the shortage, now you just fell right into my illustration. Check out this graph here, Ron. The housing market, the number of homes for sale from 1983. Honestly, I was shocked to take a look at that. In 1983, there were over 3 million homes on the market for sale. In 07, the peak, 3.7 million. Today, 1 million, a third the number.
I have
dramatic.
A little app on my phone, and it's local houses, you know, when something goes up for sale. Every one of them now, it says, as soon as it goes on the market, contingent, meaning contingent on the offer if it goes through, or pending. So the sales are just like that. It seems like something's on the market, somebody buys it.
Yeah. Days.
Yeah.
Days. You got to be ready to pull the trigger.
All right. So Shea Stats, are you ready? The summer months of June, July, August are ranked 10th, 5th, and 11th in terms of the S&P 500 performance over the last 30 years. So a little bit unpredictable, I'd say, and that's from BTN Research. You guys were talking about home prices. I saw you holding up the graph there. Mm-hmm. So here's one. Existing home prices in the United States have risen for 39 consecutive quarters through the end of the first quarter of 2020. So that's from June 30th of 2011 through March 31st of 2021. So that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
That's from the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Americans filed 4.33 million new business applications in 2020. That's up 24% from the ones filed in 2019 and up 75% from those filed in 2010. And that's from the Census Bureau. Mm. All right. Well, keeping up with inflation over the last 25 calendar years, so 1996 to 2020, the cost of living adjustments, COLA, for Social Security benefits has increased 68.3%. And inflation as measured by the Consumer Price Index, or CPI, has increased 69.7%. That's from the Social Security Department of Labor.
So pretty close, really.
They're like neck and neck.
Yeah.
All right, Medicare covers 61.2 million Americans age 65 and older. President Biden proposed on the 2020 campaign trail to lower the age of Medicare eligibility to 60, a move that would impact an additional 20.8 million Americans, and that's from the Kaiser Family Foundation.
It's a lot of people, and Medicare is already not in good financial condition, so we'll see how that goes.
All right, let's talk about college debt. If you're hoping
another
that the younger
subject.
Folks will cover Medicare, let's talk about college debt. 45 million Americans have $1.58 trillion of student loan debt outstanding as of March 31st of 2021. That's a record dollar total, and that's from the Federal Reserve.
Wow. $4,000 billion. That is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how many students that is, or what that population represents, or what the average would be.
Or the average age, because, you know, a lot of folks go back for their master's.
Yes.
Handful of my friends have their doctorate. I mean, that's a little extreme, because especially depending on what you get your doctorate in, you may not be getting a raise at work.
Yeah.
For example, higher ed, that's not necessarily an automatic bump up
increase
in salary.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so here's a little sports stat for you folks. You see, I'm warming up to the idea. It's only taken 8 years, but I'm starting to throw them in. before the beginning of the four-day PGA Championship golf tournament, one bettor wagered $1,000 on Phil Mickelson to win when the odds were 300 to 1 that the 50-year-old would come out on top. Mm. The gambler won $300,000. Mickelson, winning his 45th career PGA event, won $2.16 million, pushing his career earnings to $94.6 million before tax, and that's from DraftKings Sportsbook.
Nice, good job, Phil.
Yes, well, I went out to the Crown yesterday. It was beautiful.
Teach your kids to play golf or throw a baseball.
Yeah. You
know. And if they can do neither. Learn Shea stats. My dad tried so hard. He tried so hard, Ron.
To get you to play sports?
To get me to play sports, yeah. They put me in every, and everything.
95 million for Mickelson.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Crazy town. Yeah, well, there's your Shea stats.
Appreciate it, Shea. Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. So we've got some time before the break here. Thank you, Shea. Appreciate it again. How much time do we have here before we need to take a break, sir?
How much time do you need? No, we can go about 4 or 5 minutes.
4 or 5 minutes,
yeah.
Okay. So some of the biases that we have about investing, some of the off-puts, if you will, false evidence appearing real sometimes. Prospect theory. This is a descript theory based on experimental evidence. Most individuals are more risk-averse versus pleasure-seeking by a ratio of roughly 2 to 1. If you have a loss, generally it's felt twice as much as any gain you might experience. And doesn't that make sense?
Mm, yeah.
The problem with that, of course, is if you can be aware of these kinds of biases, hopefully over time, it can help all of us to withstand some of the negativity that sometimes occurs in the prices of the assets that we own. People make decisions based more on probabilities than potential outcomes. These are some of the points related to prospect theory. People make decisions using mental heuristics.
Mental heuristics?
Mental shortcuts and biases. So you may say, well, you know, I'd never invest in the Chinese stock market right now. I mean, that country's crazy. Well, frankly, some of those who are looking or trying to gaze into the future are saying they're more positive about China. Am I recommending China? By no means. I'm just saying, isn't it interesting? When most of us tend to be negative about a given subject, we may well be wrong, especially if we're feeding into that herd behavior. Loss aversion, the tendency to feel the impact of losses more than gains. This values function can be illustrated graphically using an asymmetrical F-shaped curve, S-shaped curve. So what that simply means is the loss that we feel using that curve is shown as an example in that curve of how much reality that is to our own emotions. So again, if we can interrupt that, understanding that, all right, if that loss is that significant, and it actually puts to mind the couple, we were reviewing their risk tolerance yesterday, and they were very appreciative of that questionnaire, because it helped them understand themselves when they were actually looking at the losses incurred in different portfolios and how they individually would respond to it. It helped them confirm where they were at, and it also helped them to see again that sometimes the prices don't move in any given direction, unless, of course, you own a home, which we've just been talking about. But given the reality that stocks are repriced by minute, hour, day, you see those repricings occur all the time based on sometimes good information, sometimes misinformation, sometimes overreaction. Those emotions are upfront and close and personal related to the stock market. So if you have money managers who are buying those companies as though an owner might, you may tend to do better over time than someone who's just trading to trade those particular companies. All right? So the next one is the paradox of choice. Giving people more choice does not increase performance or satisfaction. Sometimes we have too many choices. People are easily overwhelmed with information. Numerous biases come into play. People often do nothing if they're confused. Surprise. And optimal decisions are not made. Mistakes may well indeed be made. That's why sometimes having someone counsel you through these things can be extremely helpful. What do we do about this? How do we forward think about this? How do we anticipate what you're going to need in the future by having those conversations? That's why many times having someone oversee or help you in your portfolio can be incredibly helpful in helping you avoid some of these biases.
There are just so many layers when you make financial decisions. I mean, when Dennis says that, I think about a lot of the client meetings that I have with clients, and, you know, we make a choice, we're going to do this. And so I'm like, well, now that we've decided that, we have to choose between A and B. And as you delve down to it, it can be a little bit overwhelming. So having time to reflect and to discuss either with your spouse or maybe with a friend or with your financial advisor some of the reasons behind. But sometimes it gets a little bit like you feel you're in a circle, because you make a choice means you have to make another choice, which means you need to make another choice. So,
good point. Now, this information, by the way, is coming from the Yale School of Management, the study material that I actually used for my CPWA. And I've been wanting to share this for some time and finally getting to it. I found it extremely helpful. And hopefully, again, the end result is that we can communicate this to our clients more effectively in helping them through some of their own biases. Yes, Ron?
I do have a question on the text line.
You bet.
Let's see. It says, is it good to move money within a 401k to a commodity like gold, if available, or an inflation-protected SEC fund, treasury notes, for more stability? Or should you trust that they will have it in the right funds when you feel there's a possibility of a major market downturn?
Boy, that's just about an impossible question to answer. I would say it would depend on the mutual fund. It would depend on what they own. It would depend on your own risk tolerance, the dependencies, if you will, in that answer are too great for me to answer on the radio. But if you're thinking of taking some money off the table and or participating with inflation, generally those are very good things to pursue over a given time. But it's still going to depend on the individual fund within your 401k. Okay?
And I would think also, like, how far are you from retirement? Is that a good move, depending on your timeline in front of you?
Are you trying to set some money aside so that you can draw it for income? That's one of the most important decisions you could make, because you don't want to be controlled by the stock market when you need it, when you need the money.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.